Welcome to Sermons and Sounds of Plymouth, the podcast of Plymouth United Church of Christ. I'm Pastor David, and on behalf of the members of this congregation, thank you very much for joining us. May God bless you through these words, and may you know God's love through them. Now, the podcast.
Gospel according to Luke 14, 25 to 33. Now large crowds were traveling with him, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and brother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000. If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for the terms of peace. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions." Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the famous Lutheran theologian during World War II, who was hung in a Nazi death camp for conspiring to assassinate Adolf Hitler, wrote in his book, The Cost of Discipleship, "Cheap grace is the grace we bestow on ourselves. Cheap grace is the preaching of forgiveness without requiring repentance. Baptism without church discipline. Communion without confession. Cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross, grace without Jesus Christ, living and incarnate." If you had invited someone with you today for the first time, and this was their first exposure to the gospel message of Jesus, you might find them excusing themselves to go to the restroom and then slipping out the back door. Looking at this text on the face of it, of what was just read, the message that it reveals is, to put it plainly, harsh. And of course, this isn't at the top of the list for sermon topics that one would want to preach either. When you look at this passage, this certainly doesn't sound like the Jesus that we read throughout the gospel. Can this be the same Jesus who found himself among the prostitutes and the homeless, the desperately poor, healing the lepers and others that were sick and infirm, constantly lifting up the dignity of women, saying things like, "Let the little children come to me, and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of heaven"? Or in Matthew, where Jesus states, "You have heard it said, you should love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. And pray for them which despicably use you and persecute you." How do we understand this in-your-face message that Jesus is announcing to the crowd that is following him? We live in a consumer-driven culture here in North America, where God has to fit into our lifestyle. We will communicate with God when we have time, and not the reverse, in which Jesus is suggesting in our gospel message. We are caught up worshiping so many different gods in our lives: sports, vacations, entertainment, obtaining wealth, our possessions, our careers, hobbies, and that's just to name a few. North Americans spend $53 billion on just their pets last year. And many of our pets eat better than the homeless and poor of our country. Yet Congress this year is trying to cut food stamps by $40 billion over the next 10 years. The Christian church in this country has lost its moral compass and is dying slowly but surely in this consumer-oriented culture. People have been leaving the Euro-Christian church in large numbers, and we are doing nothing to stop the bleeding. We are so caught up into our secular society that we have lost our way. And when I was in Chicago, I used to pulpit fill for ministers that needed time off for vacations and church conferences, training, etc. I would come to Eau Claire and other locations to fill in for pastors on Sunday morning. And on occasion, when I would come up in Wisconsin in the fall of the year, a pastor would say to me, "Now, please make sure the service starts on time. And please keep your sermon to around 15 minutes and no more than 20 minutes because the Packers are playing Sunday and people will get up and walk out of your service otherwise." Wow, I guess that says it all. And of course, it's just not Wisconsin. Many so-called Christians across the country don't show up to church, period, on Pro Football Sunday. Their faith has been laid at the feet of society and has taken up the form of worship to the god of sports. 80% of the people in the United States claim to be Christian, yet only 30% annually attend church on any regular basis. In 2011, the Christian Century magazine published an article that states that 39% of the worshipers in a typical congregation were men. It goes on to say that even when we do show up for worship, we were not particularly happy about it, and that study after study has shown that many men who claim themselves as Christians feel bored, alienated, and disengaged from the church. When men drag themselves to church, researchers say it's not for themselves, but to fulfill an obligation of our roles as sons, husbands, father, or pastor. Now in our text today, Jesus' first discipleship saying is framed in stark language. "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brother and sister, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple." Jesus, in his person and message, requires those who follow him to answer to the ultimate allegiance to him. It is not surprising that this may inherently bring family strife. The language of this particular saying raises concerns for many. Does Jesus really call us to hate our biological family and our very lives? It might be helpful to know that Jesus is using hyperbolic language here, as he does frequently in his teachings. This becomes clear when we compare his sayings in Luke with its parallel reading in Matthew 10:37. "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Matthew is drawing on the same Jesus tradition as Luke, but Luke seems to have interpreted the more stark language of hate to refer to primary allegiance. For Matthew, this saying indicates that our primary allegiance must be to Jesus rather than family. The next saying emphasizes the same point about loyalty. Discipleship is defined by following Jesus and carrying the cross. This phrase indicates that giving up self-interest and competing loyalties are center. Neither of these sayings of Jesus lend themselves to an easy, low-cost form of faith. Instead, they stress the high cost of following Jesus. Now, the two brief parables that follow are suggesting two different scenarios. The first envisions a landowner building a tower, either for storing produce or guarding land and animals. And if the landowner does not estimate how much the tower will cost, it is possible that the project will remain unfinished due to the lack of funds. The end result will be ridicule from all who see it and all who see this unfinished structure. And the second story is about a king who assesses the number of troops in light of the greater number that his enemy possesses. If he cannot win the number of with the number of soldiers he has, The only wise choice will be to negotiate with the enemy long before they meet in battle. Jesus uses these two stories to illustrate the necessity of counting the cost of discipleship. Jesus is telling us either to finish the discipleship journey once begun or not to begin it at all. Following Jesus is an all-or-nothing proposition. The concluding summary makes the connection clear. None of you can become my disciples if you do not give up all your possessions. In this passage, Jesus calls people to a kind of discipleship that is not cheap. It's like Bonhoeffer's early statement in this sermon about cheap grace. It's not easy and not to be entered into without deep consideration of the consequences and the cost. Pope Francis, the new pope of the Roman Catholic Church, has delivered some very prophetic messages over the past few months. And people of all of good faith need to hear his voice. One such message is called Walking with Others Through the Night, where he candidly talks about the urgent need for the church to reach out to those who have abandoned the church because they think the church can no longer give them any meaningful or importance. Pope Francis insists we need a church unafraid to going forth into their night. We need a church capable of meeting them on their way. We need a church capable of entering into their conversation. We need a church able to dialogue with those disciples who, having left Jerusalem behind, are wandering aimlessly alone with their own disappointment. Disillusioned by Christianity, now considered barren and fruitless soil, incapable of generating meaning today. We need a church capable of walking at Jesus' side, says the Pope, of doing more than simply listening to them, a church which accompanies them on their journey, a church able to make sense of the night contained in the flight of so many, a church which realizes that the reason why people leave also contains reasons why they can eventually return. But we need to know how to interpret with courage the larger picture. What really is a priority in our life? We really need to think about it. I like the old proverb that states that we must slow down so God can simply catch up with us. Where does God fit into our life? This sanctuary is used roughly 1 hour a week. Plus, Pastor David, Lynn, and John practice music here at some point during the week, but otherwise, it remains empty. We are, in effect, locking God up for the week and then let God out the following Sunday for an hour and then start it all over again. As mainline Christians, we are educated, informed, and in general, live pretty comfortable lives. We are liberal and concerned about others and how they are getting along. We give to charity, are usually civil to one another, and we don't wear our religion on our sleeves because we don't want to impose our religious values on others. We raise our kids to be good citizens and take them to church, make sure they receive a good education. We try to be generous about giving to the church. And we are certainly good neighbors. A few things we need to work on is our prayer habits, reading scripture on our own, and inviting neighbors to join us in what we consider a pretty special event, which is attending our particular church of choice that we share with other members that have similar values. And with that solid resume, the mainline church is struggling to survive. The Roman Church and the mainline Protestant churches are in some way on a similar crash course. We are going to have to wake up in time and be able to stay focused and save the day. Maybe just being liberal is not enough. Jesus is asking us to make a decision and drastically radicalize our lives. He wants us to step it up. Let's face it. We will prefer preaching and teaching about God's grace, that is, God's commitment to redeem and save, but we should not neglect preaching about the commitment that is expected from us in return. Salvation in Jesus is not merely a transaction. It is, at heart, a relationship. And no relationship lasts without loyal commitment and actions. Because the one who redeems us also calls us into costly discipleship. Jesus' command to follow is both a gift and a demand. I joined Plymouth about a year and a half ago, and this wasn't the first church that I'd tried in Eau Claire. But once I attended a few services, I could sense that the members here were working real hard toward becoming disciples. To be a disciple means it is always a work in progress. We must always stay focused in order to perfect that relationship with God, the God that created us, the God that redeemed us, and the God that continues to sustain us, and the God that always must remain number one in our lives. We'll be a little unorthodox here because I don't feel I gave you the full weight of the sermon. And before we say the Lord's Prayer, I want to give you an example of discipleship. When I worked in Chicago a few years ago, I worked in one of the worst areas of Chicago, in South Chicago, close to the Cook County border. And it was a place called Ford Heights and another one called Chicago Heights. In the late 80s, an anthropologist from Chicago said Ford Heights was the poorest suburb in the United States. It was like a bomb hit this place. There wasn't even vegetation and trees. There's a few trees, but I mean, there was so much poverty. And Ford Heights is right outside of a Ford Motor Company assembly plant. And yet none of the people there get jobs at the plant. And I remember being in Chicago Heights once, and I asked a few of the gang members there. I said, "Hey, listen, why don't you take me over to Ford Heights? So kind of introduce me so we can help out over there." And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry. We are not going into that place." That's how up for grabs that particular area. And the main population was young teenage kids, just wandering. So one day when I was down on the street in Ford Heights, these three white clergy showed up, and two women and two men, they were United Methodists, and they showed up with supplies and gifts, and they just sat down on the curb and started talking to people, and they had this dialogue. And this was a dangerous part of the city, seriously dangerous, and they sat and they talked. And they greeted the little kids. And in this place, there was such abject poverty and malnutrition that you could give a little kid a bowl of vegetables and he would eat it like it was candy because they just don't get enough food. There's a place in Chicago, there's places that are called supermarket deserts where the supermarkets move way out of the area and the only place where you can actually buy food is at the liquor store. But then the mom and the children have to go by the drug dealers to get in there to get their chips or whatever the liquor store sells to them at inflated prices. So here's these three Methodist pastors. All of them are wearing their collars. And they're engaging people. They're talking with them. And so they handed out food to people, and they handed out supplies, and then they left. So the next week, people kept saying, "Where are these people? Where are they at?" And I said, "Well, they'll maybe come back someday." And 6 months later, people were saying, "Where are those people that came in to see us? We've never had folks like that just walk into our hood. So where are they from?" I said, "They're from Eau Claire, Wisconsin." "Well, where's Eau Claire?" But see, this is discipleship. Now, those three pastors I knew, and I knew they were coming, and they were frightened out of their wits. Their eyes were this big when they went into that area. had never been into an area like that before. But they committed themselves. That's discipleship. Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Baptist Hood of Chicago. Go figure.
And that is the good news for this day and for all days. Thank you again for listening to the Sermons and Sounds of Plymouth podcast. If you are in the Eau Claire area, we especially invite you to join us for worship on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. And I invite you also to check out our website at pcucc.com for upcoming events and special worship services. From Plymouth United Church of Christ, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, this is Pastor David. Thank you for spending this time with us. May God bless you.